Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Every time I think Mayor Wokeford has lost it, completely lost it, she proves me wrong by losing it even more. She's Moses now, or at least Moses Lightfoot, as she awaits the coming of the White Shadow, Arne Duncan, primed by the Obama ROM machine to take her job. Maybe some reporters will pick up on this, I don't know. I didn't think she'd run for re-election, but now it seems the way she's talking in her budget address, she's running to be Chicago's Moses. Quoting from her budget address, she says, "We have no Moses, but we do have each other, and we have the lessons of history from these biblical times to the present." She said in her budget address, with more taxes coming and the $2 billion in COVID/bailout cash from Joe Biden, "Our people need us. And more importantly," she said, "we have an obligation to them and to ourselves and to future generations to seize with gusto the opportunities that this moment presents to learn the lessons of history and not repeat the mistakes of the past." Okay, Mayor Wokeford, my former friend. But the city is hurting, crime and violence, tourists avoiding downtown. And what's to come besides the Chicago Bears muscling her on a new deal? What's coming? Racial politics, of course. This is Chicago, and it's played by the identitarians over the ward remap fight. As the black population has dropped significantly, as Latinos are on the ascent, and as white aldermen, including our guest Brendan Riley of the 42nd Ward, who's been fighting for more cops downtown to combat the gangs, are stuck in the middle. And so I can't wait to ask Riley, in the voice of Edward G. Robinson, "What do you think of your mayor now?" Robinson never said that in the movie, but still. And who the heck is Antonio Palazzi? Jeff Carlin is here as always, my friend, Master Baker, co-host, and Mr. Science of this podcast. He's executive producer at WGN Radio. And if we sound halfway decent, Jeff has made it so. And a quick announcement, we are accepting advertising on this podcast because, as Don Barzini says, after all, we are not communists. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. My columns are free for now, but I'm also getting ready to push that button and charge a nominal fee because, well, Don Barzini said. And where are you with Alderman Riley as Mayor Wokeford invokes Moses? You're here with us on the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, on the Chicago Way, on WGN Plus.
The Old Testament tells us that Moses gathered the Israelites together before they finally reach the Promised Land after a 40-year set of grueling trials. Their struggles seem not unlike what we have endured over these last 18 months, hunger, plagues, and death. Moses told the assembled masses that they were doomed to repeat this harrowing test until a new generation arose, one that was united through their faith in God and shared belief that they could attain the Promised Land. Should they remain united in their faith, as Moses said, they would be blessed in a multitude of ways. Should they falter in their faith, however, they would be doomed to repeat the plagues, the famines, and the suffering of their forefathers. Moses knew that while his people were weary, they were ready to reach their end of days and step into the light of the Promised Land, a reality not unlike the one that we are living in right now. We have no Moses, but we do have each other. And we have the lessons of history from those biblical times to the present. Our people need us.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
I promised in the monologue that to our next guest, Alderman Brendan Riley of the 42nd Ward, the great 42nd Ward, that I would ask him this question. What do you think of your Mayor Moses now?
Think of my Mayor Moses now.
Well, she invoked Moses in her budget speech. I thought she wasn't running for re-election, but I guess she might be wanting to be Moses.
It was an interesting choice. She used all sorts of material in her hour-long budget speech. I can't speak to whether or not she was ever proclaiming to be Moses. But she certainly has challenges, and Moses sure did.
Yes, and Edward G. Robinson never really said that, as we know. But I am interested in this thing that, I mean, as are you. First of all, let's talk about crime in the 42nd Ward. You've been pushing hard on City Hall for more cops, and you've been going after some hotels that are, I guess, lax in their security. What's going on downtown with people avoiding it?
It's the crime down here, as I've said before, has spiraled into something we've never seen in the last 25 years. And out of incredible frustration, about 3 weeks ago, I sent a letter to the police superintendent and the mayor describing the situation, explaining that this is unprecedented and that we do not have enough resources in place overnight to secure downtown. And that's a real problem. Not just for me as the alderman representing this area, but for the entire city of Chicago. To your point, when people don't feel comfortable coming to downtown Chicago, that has a devastating impact on the entire city. Because downtown, as you know, is about 2/3 of the city's economy. And a big chunk of that is driven by tourism and conventions. And guess what? They read newspapers. And when there is a sense that downtown is not a place that embraces law and order, you're going to see a ripple effect on the economy. And that's really bad news. And that's what I tell my colleagues. You know, we're all forced to play tug of war over very limited police resources overnight. And my colleagues can make a very good argument that in their neighborhoods, the violence is unbridled. And I don't argue with that. And I'm not suggesting downtown is any more important than any other neighborhood in Chicago. But if we lose downtown, the whole city loses. And that was my point when I really started amping up my pressure on City Hall to get us more resources, which I'm happy to say has happened. We do have more overnight resources now. We have an aggressive new police commander in the 18th district, a good law and order cop, commands respect. So I'm optimistic, but we shouldn't be in this place. And it's incredibly frustrating as the alderman who does not control the police department or the resources to see this happen. I've been working down here for 14 years as alderman. I think we've made incredible progress. Half the city's growth was fueled by growth in my ward alone over the last 10 years in the census tract. We can't afford to lose that momentum. And so that's why I took these extraordinary steps. And I'm going to continue to keep the pressure up. We have to get this back under control.
I mean, I always hear the fact that there's probably, 100,000 people living roughly downtown. And I mean, that's, what's that, 5%, 10% of the whole population of the actual metro area, of the city proper. I mean, it serves a purpose that should be the largest proportion of cops overnight. And then you tack on top of the idea that, like you're saying, that there's this, the economy is driven by downtown. I wonder, you know, what do you think or what have people told you do they think is driving kind of the influx of crime downtown? Do you think it's cops not being there, or do you think it's there's some other opportunity? Or I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what has all of a sudden led to this. Like you said, in the last 20 years, the biggest spike is we've seen.
Well, all those things you just mentioned are ingredients, right? Certainly, COVID, emptying out downtown of commuters, offices being closed and dark, streets being empty, emboldened a lot of folks that want to come down here and commit crimes of opportunity. But at the same time, you know, during the pandemic and following the civil unrest we had last year, which was devastating, a lot of the neighborhoods still haven't rebuilt. A lot of the places that folks in the South and West sides would frequent for on the weekends for drinks and cocktails and food never reopened. And so a lot of folks started exploring downtown, which is great. Unfortunately, so did the gangs. And the gangs started renting out hotel rooms down here, having curbside parties. And the problem is when you have rival gangbangers running into each other downtown and they're all heavily armed, you know what happens next. And so I think those conditions, I think the fact the city was decimated by rioting and looting, not just downtown, but in the neighborhoods too. The lack of people down here, the positive loitering that we have, when we have 500,000 commuters downtown every day. All those factors combined, plus I think a police department that has had probably the worst 2 years in its history with the unrest and with the, you know, shocking, although rare incidents of police misconduct. All of that combined has really had an impact on police morale. And you can tell. I'm friends with lots of cops and they've been working hard, but you know, there's not a whole lot of respect and appreciation given to these folks. They don't ask for it. But they have one of the toughest jobs in Chicago and they put their lives on the line for us every day. And I don't think they get quite enough credit for that. And they need more credit for that because we need them out there working hard for us. So there are a whole lot of factors involved there. Regardless of how we got here, we can't stay here. We have to remedy this. And luckily, our new downtown commander is all about tamping this down and taking back this territory. I mean, he talks about this tactically. And he's right. Once we get these blocks back, we got to keep them.
Lightfoot, my former friend, and I supported her, as you know, Brendan, mm-hmm. yep. She let the looters take over North Michigan Avenue and the rest of the near North and smashing all the windows and everything and laying down, and the second time again, letting the looters take over. I wonder what I'm sure the reaction has been. People, you know, people like landlords, businesses, they call City Hall and they call their aldermen. What kind mm-hmm. And you had nothing to do with it.
No.
Let's be clear. I mean, you're not commanding the cops. You're not running City Hall. You're just the alderman. But what kind of grief were you getting and have been getting?
Well, I've been getting a lot of grief and deservedly so. I'm the voice of the people who live and work downtown. And you're right. I don't control the police department or allocation of resources or strategy or tactics. And that's probably a really good thing. I'm not a professional police officer, but I have a responsibility to keep folks downtown safe. And that's the most frustrating part of my job, is that there's a disconnect. Aldermen have lots of control over lots of things in their respective wards, except for public safety. And so then we're really forced into an advocacy and lobbying type of role. We're all working against each other and against our respective neighborhoods to get these scarce resources. And so that's a real problem. And I think that when we talk, you know, we're starting our budget hearings for the city this Friday. And we're going to have the police department in front of us next week. And I'm going to be focused very, very intently on the police department's budget, because I'll be honest, I was not impressed with the budget proposal that's been laid out for the police. I think it's insufficient. And we shouldn't have to have 50 aldermen fighting over resources overnight to keep their neighborhood safe. And that's as best we can do. It's very frustrating. And, you know, the looting and the rioting was devastating. I was out there both nights during it.
I know you were.
And it was just a horrific thing to watch. And then the next morning, you know, out with the shop owners and the restaurant owners, helping them pick up glass and tables off the street, ATMs in the middle of intersections. It was horrible. And it's not a place we can ever go back to, but we're still feeling the ripple effects from that devastation last year.
One of those who are feeling the ripple effects, and please, Jeff, if you have questions, jump in. Okay, buddy. But I'm just interested in this. One of the ripple effects is Mayor Lightfoot and her future. I don't think she has much. And now that the Obama ROM machine is pushing the white shadow, Arnie Duncan, and positioning him, right, to run for mayor, does she have a future?
You know, John, I haven't spoken to the mayor about her future plans. You know, all indications today suggest she's going to run again. She is raising money. She's continuing to network. But I honestly, I'm not someone to provide much insight on, you know, how the mayor is thinking about her reelection plans. We just don't have conversations about that stuff. I couldn't presume to know what the mayor plans to do. Well, or
I don't think you would know what's in her mind, but no. you are a longtime alderman. You understand the politics of this town as best as anyone in the city that I've met. And you see what's happening. So where do you think she is in terms of a future for running for reelection? Can she win? Can she run? I mean, if she runs, can she even win?
Well, look, you know, I think we've all seen some recent polling, citywide polling the last couple of months that shows, you know, the mayor has vulnerabilities and that the number one concern in Chicago is crime. And that needs to change. So I think, you know, the mayor's polling, her salvation could be truly moving the needle on crime in Chicago. Absent that, I think it's a difficult election. But again, you know, these polls are a snapshot in time. And so what polling, the most recent polling tells us is that folks aren't real happy with how things are going in Chicago. And when you're the mayor, that's not great news for you. But the polling also shows that there are opportunities for the mayor to right the course and get better with Chicago voters. And I think at least the most recent WGN poll suggests that salvation can be found in finally getting a handle on crime. So, you know, I don't think we should put a whole lot of stock in polls, you know, two years almost before the next mayor's election. But no, as it stands today, there's room for improvement, significant. And I think the voters are willing to keep an open mind on the mayor so long as they see progress on the priorities that they've laid out. And the number one priority, no matter where you live in Chicago, is having a safe neighborhood.
Yes.
So that's where I think the mayor can you know, right the ship and get back on a good trajectory with voters. But absent that, I think it would be challenging.
I want to ask you about something that it's just observing, you know, seeing city hall meetings and city council meetings. And I know that there have been times where it's been tumultuous in city hall, but I feel, and this is just, you know, observational, that there were a lot of younger, newer, if you will, alder people, alders, whatever we're calling you now, that seemingly are all about disruption and, yeah, you know, making noise and getting their names in headlines and papers and stuff. And it doesn't feel to me as a taxpayer, as a person in media, that they're pulling on the rope with everybody else to try to move the city forward. What's your read on city council as of late?
No, I think you're spot on. You know, it's a far less mature, literally and figuratively, city council than it has been in a long time. It's a much younger city council. I think that a number of the, I'm not going to paint them all with a broad brush, but some of the new aldermen didn't really ever have a handle on decorum or process or procedure.
Decorum?
And here we are. Yeah. And I'm not saying that the city council has always had a perfect record on that, but compared to what, you know, I've been used to in my 14 years as alderman, it's chaotic and it's disrespectful. And it shouldn't be about scoring PR points or getting one over on the mayor. We're living through a crisis right now, and this is not the time to be messing around. And unfortunately, a number of my colleagues think anytime they can slow down any work on public policy that may or may not be backed by the mayor, that's a win. And, you know, slowing things down just for the sake of slowing things down to embarrass people is not good policymaking, and it's not good governance. So I'm tired of it. A lot of the more senior members of the city council are tired of it. We've tried to counsel some of the younger members on how to respect decorum and the rules of order. And that really hasn't been all that fruitful. But no, I think taxpayers should be a little bit embarrassed by the way city council proceedings have been going. There is a fundamental lack of respect and maturity there that doesn't serve anybody's purpose. So I'm hoping that changes, but it's a very different city council with, you know, it leans much further to the left than it used to. And there are some folks there that are really there just to make a name for themselves. And that's kind of a frustrating fact.
I thought it was astonishing in the recent debate over the renaming of Lakeshore Drive that aldermen who I've always known to be not, you know, everyone in the city politics is to the left of me. Okay, I understand that.
Sure, sure.
But you're not a right winger by any stretch. And to hear you and others described as white supremacists by colleagues in the council, I was like, wow, what planet is this? You know, what?
Yeah, that was, you know, that was ridiculous. And it's become the default now. You know, if you're losing a debate, call the opposition a racist. And that's ridiculous, especially given the fact myself, I renamed Michigan Avenue Bridge after DuSable 10 years ago when no one was really paying attention. Right. So it's not like I have some beef with DuSable. I just thought changing Lakeshore Drive was ridiculous and unnecessary. And So call me that name, I guess, but it's completely false. You know, you're right. I'm not a right winger, but no one has ever accused me of being a left wing progressive. I'm a moderate who leans, you know, slightly to the right on fiscal issues.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you know, regardless of your partisanship, this should be about common sense. That's what people want out of their government is some common sense, not a bunch of rhetoric and baloney. Just get the job done. And I think people are tired of it. You know, the left versus the right and this and that. Come on, let's just get together and get things done.
Potholes and garbage collection. That's what everybody wants.
Yeah, well, right. That and crime. Yeah.
But to your point on, and to Jeff's point about the, unhinged council, at least parts of it or aspects of it. We're coming up after the violence in the summer and the, you know, the divvy bike gang slapping tourists around and that thing that happened on North State Street and all the terrible news. We're coming up to another point of contention, which is the identitarian politics of the remap, in which we see the black population of the city dropping, the Latino population, and I refuse to use Latinx because I know Latinos and they don't like it. That group is on the ascendancy, and the white guys are stuck in the middle.
Yes.
So how is all this, given what we saw on the ridiculous aspects of the DuSable fight, how is the ward remap fight going to play out where people identify and cut up the pie based on the color of skin?
Sure. Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating remap exercise this time. I was a part of the remap 10 years ago, and that went pretty smooth. There wasn't nearly, I mean, there was a substantial drop in African-American population 10 years ago, but the Black Caucus was able to work out a relatively good deal with the Latino caucus to preserve much of what they had. But since that time, there's no way around the fact, you know, there are 250,000 fewer African-Americans in Chicago than there were. And you can't justify having that many seats on the council with that kind of precipitous population drop. And so I've been looking at the heat map of the city with a ward map overlay that shows you where all this population loss has occurred. And the vast majority of it has occurred on the south and southwest sides of the city. And you've got a ward on the south side, the 34th ward, Alderman Austin's ward, that has 11,000 people in it. And it should have 55,000 to 60,000 people in it. I mean, that is incredible. And so I think you're going to have to see, the likelihood is one or two of the African-American wards are going to have to be folded into others to keep them whole, and that you will still see Latino gains. And I think the Caucasian represented seats remain static. And there is a possibility that Chinatown could get its own Asian American seat if the boundary is drawn properly. So it's going to be an interesting food fight. The way it works for Northside aldermen typically is that Latino caucus draws up their proposed map. The Black caucus draws up their proposed map. And then we pick and choose between the two and try and work around the margins on our wards. Now, I'm in a unique situation because downtown's 42nd ward is overpopulated by about 28,000 people. And so whether I like it or not, I have to give up 28,000 people to neighbors. And so that's going to be an interesting, you know, conversation, because really you start in the center of the city and work your way out, right? You know, when you have to offload excess population, you start where it's the heaviest, which is my area. And then you figure out how that has a reverberating effect on the south and west sides. So we're just starting that. I was just in the map room yesterday and just started this conversation.
So we're going to have all that racial politics and more of that.
I suspect. Right? Yeah, I suspect. I think that's a pretty fair bet.
Was it simpler? Wasn't it, Jeff and Alderman Riley, wasn't it a much simpler time when all the maps in Illinois began at a bungalow on the southwest side?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Whatever do you mean? Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah, of course, none of us really want to live in a world where there's only a handful of people pulling all the strings, but that certainly is the reality. This whole process is crazy to me. I mean, it happens mostly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but behind closed doors and meeting rooms. And then if there's a need for public input, that could be forced, but it's not likely.
Yeah. I mean, the way it works is, and you know, to your point about centralized power. Yeah. Of course that makes map processes far smoother and less contentious because it's controlled by a handful of people. And to Jeff's point, you know, that's not the way to do it. You know, there will be a couple of public hearings about the map process generally to gather feedback, but that's really kind of a perfunctory process where you listen to people say their piece and then either you take that advice or you don't. You know, there's the Fair Maps Coalition who has drawn their own map that really doesn't respect so much the political boundaries, but more the neighborhood boundaries. And that could end up being the nuclear option. If 10 aldermen object to a map, they can actually force a referendum where the voters get to pick which map they prefer. And you know, any group of 10 aldermen can put a map up for a vote by referendum. And that's a possibility if we aren't able to iron these things out, which means total chaos.
I guess it might mean that Stacey Davis Gates gets to pick the council that she wants. Right? I mean, I'm looking at, you know, I mean, historically, the Chicago Democratic Organization had precinct muscle throughout the city. Now they don't. Now that isn't so. So if it comes to a citywide referendum, who's got the people to get voters out? It looks to me like the organized labor on the public sector side, teachers unions, AFSCME, all those people will be dominant. And then we're going to have even more of a progressive city council while taxes keep going up and people keep fleeing.
Well, there's a potential.
I want Brendan Riley to put some sanity in this system.
Well, you know, John, I'll tell you, the public employee unions have an incredible track record, in field work, and they are good organizers and they know how to work precincts. And you're right. The old infrastructure is essentially gone. You know, there's a few lone outposts in the southwest side and south sides of Chicago. And we put together a pretty good organic organization downtown. But absent that, there's not much. Whether it's, one on the ground or not, it promises to be an incredibly expensive referendum process, because it'll bring all the special interests to bear. You know, the downtown business community will have an opinion on maps. The chambers of commerce will have their opinions on maps. Labor will have their opinion. It could really get messy and super expensive and confusing. You know, asking voters to pick between three or four, potentially five different maps on a ballot, that's a pretty steep climb on education about ward boundaries and communities of interest and neighborhoods. So I'm hoping that we can avoid that. That I think would be a bad situation for everybody. Hopefully, cooler heads will prevail here, and we can put together a reasonable BAP that properly represents the demographic changes in Chicago.
I got to ask you while I've got you here, the Mexican Independence Day stuff, that was that was such a cluster. You know, our studios are downtown and we are off air around 7 o'clock. And so by the time we hit the streets to get out, and that everybody down there, and I'm whatever, woe is me. But there was no warning for anything that happened there. There was no. Hey, by the way, the city is going to be shut down. Roads, and you're not going to be able to get out of downtown. You're not going to be able to get into downtown. And it was such chaos. To me, my read on it was that with what happened last year with the rioting and the looting, that the mayor didn't want to be made to look stupid again. And it was an overreaction to a problem that didn't really need necessarily as much force. I mean, if people don't understand what I'm talking about, there were Lakeshore Drive was shut down in all sorts of weird places. The city downtown, all streets were blocked with salt trucks and garbage trucks. So there was clearly some sort of forethought of something. But I know you were upset about it. What was the response from you from your complaints about it?
Look, the Mexican-American community in Chicago should have a parade. They should have an outlet to celebrate a very important day to them. And because they haven't had that outlet for a couple of years, it was denied 2 years ago. And I guess this year, COVID concerns led to a cancellation. If you have a proper parade and permitted event, it can be conducted in a proper and orderly way. But because that didn't happen this year, the Mexican-American community took it upon themselves to come downtown and have their party. And not just one night, but seven nights. And each night drew a slightly larger crowd. And I think the police department and the mayor's office became concerned that this was starting to get out of hand. And I would say the total lockdown may have been a bit of an overreaction, but given the trauma that downtown was exposed to last summer, I honestly can't fault them for that. But to your point, if that's going to happen, you need to clearly communicate that well in advance. I had residents that spent 5 or 6 hours trying just to get back to their parking garage in their building where they live. That's not acceptable. And there was not a lot of good information given to the officers that were working these street closures. They didn't know if they were allowed to allow essential workers and residents into the neighborhood or not. And so there was a lot of confusion on that front. So my hope is next year we give the Mexican-American community a proper parade to celebrate an important day so that we don't have to deal with this downtown. You need permitted events. You need permitted events to maintain order. This was clearly not a permitted event. No one signed off on this. But if you know it's coming, plan ahead and communicate broadly well in advance. We can make arrangements and plan around these things.
You've been so kind to be give us so much time, and I just have one more question, Alderman, and it's something I brought up in the monologue, and Jeff and I have talked about it. It's, again, crime-related. Mm. You were attacked on the street in your own ward And I just want to know who the heck is Antonio Palazzi and what's his deal?
I honestly have never met the guy before. And I think the guy was just having a really bad night. He was on God knows what, but I had the misfortune of running into him on his bad night. I was fine. I grew up playing hockey, and he's not a terribly big and imposing guy, but that was not a personal thing. I've never met or heard of the guy before that happened.
Okay, well, now that we have that mystery solved, I want to thank you very much for being here. You've given me food for like two or three columns. I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Now I'm in trouble.
No, you're not. Thanks a lot, Alderman Riley. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, John, Jeff, take care, guys.
Where's your Messiah now? Yeah, where's your Moses now, Shane? Let my people go now.
You know, Jeff, I forgot to tell everybody, but Kristen put it on my Facebook page that you and Christine and Kristen came over and I cooked you some.
Oh, you stole my thunder, John. I was going to thank you.
What?
Oh, I wanted to say, I just had another a Lavrocki salad this afternoon. Because it was so much fun, John. You had Kristen and Christine and I over with Betty cooking and you cooking for us. And it was such a magnificent spread. I mean, way, way beyond what I had expected. And obviously foolish of me not to expect a full spread.
It's too much food, but I'm always afraid. I don't want any guest in my house to ever have to think, oh, can I take that other piece of fish? You know what I mean? Or chicken, you know? Yep. So I made too much. But that's what leftovers are, and that's what you brought home. So
absolutely. It was so much fun.
Another element that we must discuss is the Chicago Way, the future of the Chicago Way. Don Barzini, as you know, said to all his friends that a man may charge for services because, after all, we are not communists. And we would not charge people to listen to the Chicago Way. It's free and will remain so. But I'd sure like to get some advertising, man. I want to pay. I want to, because everybody, I wanted to pay Jeff, okay? I wanted to give him a few bucks, not $1 million a year, because I don't have it. I don't have a job. But I wanted to try to do something. He refuses. So we need to get some advertising.
Yes. Yes. We'd gratefully accept advertising. And now that you're only tied to johncastnews.com. Ding.
No longer at the paper that got rid of me. Yeah. That I left. Right.
Exactly. Advertising would be great. People can reach out to John or myself on Twitter, or you can shoot me an email. Very simple. JeffPCarlin@WGN. JeffPCarlin@gmail.com. It's my personal email, but it's I've got a nice filter on there. So even if you sign me up for something crazy, I won't get it. Yeah, it certainly would make things easier for us and allow us to produce this in a better fashion, if you will.
Just think of all the great restaurants, car dealers. I'm thinking of Sugar Plums. You know what I mean? But whatever. Or I don't know about political advertising though. I mean, But public service announcements like don't beat up the alderman of the 42nd ward or something like that would be welcome. But it's just so much fun, and I just want to keep doing it. And I think Jeff wants to keep doing it. So
no offer too big or too small.
Well, there you go.
Within reason. But yeah, absolutely. And again, John, I do want to thank you, Christine, too. It was such a nice time with you guys over the weekend, and it was great to be able to be together again.
With Christine and Jeff owning three cats, and with Kristen having a feral cat colony that she protects, I'm my Sudafed. I went back on the Sudafed. But it was just great, and you know, the summer's over. Now we've got the bears to worry about and the fire not to worry about because nobody wants my fire tickets. Not even my kids. It's pathetic. Okay. Well, I've got columns to write for JohnCastNews.com. You've got executive producing to do for WGN. So on behalf of Alderman Riley, attacked by Antonio Palazzi, Alderman gave me a couple of great column ideas, and I'll be writing them now. And for Jeff Carlin, my friend, executive producer at WGN Radio, co-host of the Chicago Way, and all-around good guy, even though there are three cats in his home, and me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist at JohnCassNews.com.
Don Corleone had all the judges and the politicians in New York, and he must share them. All he loved his youth. He must let us draw the water from the well. Certainly he can present a bill for such services. After all, we are not communists.
Thanks for being here, and see you again next time on another edition of The Chicago Way on WGN Plus.